Are we going? Yes, we're going.
Yep, we're going. Hello, folks.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome back to the podcast about Taskmaster that just happens to exist. You know who we are. So, what's new with you, Joe?
Nothing much really to report. Nope, that's about it.
Oh, I should say, if we are, there is a high chance we might be coming at you one day later than usual.
Again, Joe has to work.
Because,
Joe has
a life. Shame on him for having
Joe
a life.
Joe has employment that requires his presence. So, Joe cannot record on a...
So do I. I started training at my job today. I started yesterday, and
you,
I was back
you work
today.
In an escape room, Emerson. I was in meetings very late the last couple of days. I was in... There's a touch of difference.
Well, at least I have a
no,
job.
No, I'm glad that you have one. You know, I've heard the job...
A job is a job at the end of the day.
The job market's thin on the ground. But,
And I'm really enjoying it so far. I love that my colleagues are really nice, but they have like all of them really, really hate customers, and there's something so funny about it.
Oh, don't worry,
they're nice. They're
great
too. Unless people are dicks to me, I have no reason to hate them. So, yeah.
I'm interested to see how that progresses.
Me too.
Also, on a hatred standpoint, everyone...
Oh, boy.
I would just like to point out to our listeners that Zencastr is terrible and awful because it's a tech company, so of course it is. If you know that... If you are a longtime listener, hi, Spelvin, then you will know that we sometimes record these over... on Audacity locally and then talk to each other through Discord. That has caused us some issues in the past where we'll end up talking over each other, and we usually use Zencastr, but I'm not fucking paying for a Zencastr account. And Zencastr sent out an email the other day saying that they are no longer allowing, poor people to have a free tier and still record podcasts on it. So we will be moving to Audacity.
This is becoming the major... And Discord permanently. Yeah. This is becoming the major downfall of companies that desperately want more money.
Yeah, there's a phrase...
Losing supporters, they're losing subscribers, they're losing followers. It's all going to fucking
it's
shit.
It's called enshittification, if you want the technical term for it. Cory Doctorow came up with it about... 5 or 6 years ago, where it... No, almost
is
10
that
years ago.
Shit, is the shit bit of that spelled S-H-I-T?
Yeah, and shitification. It's exactly how it's spelled. Where it's basically where
makes
a company will first make the user experience really great to get in users. Then it will stop caring about the users and start caring about dragging in business customers. Then it will stop caring about the users... then the business customers will start to get treated shitty, and then the service goes downhill as they realize that they're losing money because they're losing customers because the customers don't like them anymore. This is why all tech companies are terrible.
On the topic of enshittification, if I may get topical for a second, I saw somewhere that X, to use its new name...
I will continue to dead name Twitter.
All right, whatever. Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, stupid reason. You cannot change the name of a company that big. I know this is old news, but you cannot change the name of a company that big and expect people to go along with it. Anyway, X, because that's what they want to be called, has started charging people in New Zealand and the Philippines $1 a year to use the app. That might not seem like much, but it will stop so many casual users.
I can only hope that it kills the app entirely. Can only hope that Twitter dies a slow and painful death while I can sit there and watch with popcorn.
Honestly, if your company is that big, make using the thing free. You shouldn't have to pay directly unless it's a small business or something.
If you are not paying,
or unless
you are
can...
the product. That is the problem. I don't like... any of these things. I think that...
I mean, in this capitalist world we live in, no one wins.
Oh, no, you can win. Just you have to have money. Stop. I'm going to pull a wrestling here and just chant, stop being poor. Stop being poor. As from a... which I saw on a wrestling video once.
Is that our episode title? Stop being poor?
Yes. Yes. Stop being poor. Stop being poor.
I won't chant along because it won't be in sync.
Okay.
All right. Let us talk Taskmaster for a bit.
Yes.
Okay. We've had a couple of very lackluster episodes recently. We have had 3 episodes under an hour, and we had our first episode under 50 minutes last week, and that was with all the stuff with your issues with your microphone edited out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow.
I mean, all the major issues that we couldn't explain. Yeah. What's up?
Oh, no, I was just surprised it was that short. I hadn't paid attention to the runtime.
Well, I'm relieved it was short because it meant less editing for me. Anyway, after this episode, we'll be halfway through Series 8, and I think I speak for both of us when we say this series is extremely slow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a slow
Not every
season.
Series can hit, but I guess...
It's definitely a very solid one. This is something I was thinking about recently, is that because I was watching clips from Taskmaster New Zealand, and it's like, you for this show really to hit its stride, you need a certain kind of unhinged energy that I think, if nothing else, the British comedy ecosystem cannot support. That many unhinged people, like, because that's just not how the British psyche works. You need unhinged lunatics for this show to work perfectly, which apparently New Zealand has in abundance.
New Zealand Taskmaster is a very, very different beast. But the episode we're talking about today is called Stay Humble. As always, there's a little bit of banter at the beginning, so... Alex Horn has invented another Alex Horn-style game called What's in My Pocket, and this is, at 8 seasons in, Greg has got the hang of Alex's humor.
I like how his brain works. I like this prop comedy. I'm really going to say that. I usually do not enjoy the banter between Greg and Alex, but this was really good.
Do you like prop comedy in general, like when they do it on Whose Line?
I haven't watched enough Whose Line recently to comment, but I like gags like that. I like the idea of what's in my pocket. Is it a smaller pocket? Yes. Like that, like just the solid, like surrealism gag is something I've always been a fan of.
But yeah, because Greg has known Alex for so long, he guesses that Alex has another smaller pocket in his pocket, which he does. And that little pocket has another pocket in it. Because Alex is that predictable. Who did the prize toss last week, Joe?
You did, so it's me. Also, I would like to point out the pocket had The pocket had a pocket in it, which then had another pocket in it, which had a locket in it, which had a pocket in it. Which is very funny. I very much liked that. But anyways, so starting off with the prize task. This prize task is bring in the best face, which I thought was, this is actually really good. I really liked this one, and I absolutely did not write down which order they went in. So you'll have to
forget. Shall I tell you?
Yes, I forgot to write it down.
It goes Lou, then Paul, then Sean, then Joe, and then Ian.
Lou, Paul,
and
Sean.
In my notes, Everyone's line is one point. Everyone's description is one line, except Ian's, which is 3.
Okay. So Lou brought in the face of the theoretical baby she and Greg would have, which is one of those.
And it's horrifying.
It's not horrifying. It's just ugly. It's one of those face smasher apps. It just doesn't look great. That it's unfortunate. Greg was really hoping it wouldn't. Paul Sinha brought in this gargantuan 2-foot-high face which, let me rephrase it, 2 foot high cutout of his own face that he found on the internet, which apparently was taken.
Why would anyone make that?
I don't.
And why would anyone want
it? I don't know. But Paul has it. It is from several years ago when he was several stone heavier, which he mentions as a burn on Greg via Greg's mother, because Greg's mother was apparently at the taping
bit was great.
For episode one of this season, and then asked Paul how his weight loss, for any weight loss tips on Greg's behalf. Which was...
I wonder what the status on Greg's mother is. If she's still alive, she has to be in like her 80s or 90s, like late 80s, so
people,
90s.
People can be in their 90s. Both of my mother's parents are that age, and they're still here.
Oh, yeah. Your nephew's got great-grandparents.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like,
people...
He both has great-grandparents and great-grandparents.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And then after this, then we have Sean... Who has?
Oh,
what? What's up?
Oh no! It's like I was saying. I read somewhere has Greg Davies' mum aged, and I got an article from last year that the woman who played Greg's character's mum on Man Down has died.
Yeah, I think we knew that. I at least knew that.
I didn't.
But
well, anyway.
Yes. Onwards to Sean Gibson. Sean Gibson brought in a joke for the older crowd, which is she brought in a picture of Dirk Benedict, noted American actor, noted for playing the character Face or on The A-Team, which is TBH one of the better gags on this sort of like bring in something that's like not exactly expected, which it's a really good joke.
I only know a couple of things about The A-Team. One, it's the show that Mr. T is most famous
for.
Yes,
he is.
And the theme song, I won't sing it, but I don't know that from The A-Team. I know it because they used the theme song in a bunch of, I think it was...
Top Gear episodes?
British Gas or something. British Gas. They used the theme song in some British Gas adverts a while ago. And that's where I most know the theme song from.
They also used it in a few episodes of Top Gear. And they remade the A-Team about 5 to 7 years ago, I want to say. Which, that A-Team movie was not great. It had...
remakes of old things don't do great.
Bradley Cooper in it. I will say the one it wasn't a terrible movie, but the one outstanding gag it had, because the A-Team was always kind of campy, is they broke out of a mental institution by having, because they were in there for some reason, and there was they had the whole thing of a 3D film being played on a wall, like from a projector. And so they gave everyone 3D glasses, and they have a video clip of a Humvee driving towards the camera. And then as it gets closer, all of a sudden an actual Humvee smashes through the wall, which gives them enough time to get into the Humvee and escape. And because all of the like mental patients think it's just part of the movie. Was very funny in a movie that didn't particularly have a lot of good gags in it. It did have some good gags, but it's typical mid-2010s remake shit where it's not that great.
I'd not seen it. I had nothing to say on it. What has Joe Thomas brought in?
Oh, Joe Thomas brought in a picture of a blobfish, which is famously this fish that looks like it's frowning and bloated, which I would like to point out that the blobfish actually doesn't look like that. This is something that you kind of have to know about fish. The blobfish is a very deep, like 10, 20,000 feet below the surface of the sea. Level creature, and bringing it to the surface causes it to puff up and expand like that. And so basically that fish is not only dead but desecrated. So it looks like a normal fish at depth. I'm not sure what the actual term for it is, but it's very far down in the ocean. And then
we've got Ian Sterling.
Finally, we have Ian Sterling.
Doing Ian Sterling.
Who is the proto Guy Montgomery, if we're talking about Taskmaster NZ again. And also the closest thing we have this episode to a Hawaiian shirt count, which is he brings in a onesie onto which he has imprinted Greg's face onto. And then.
So many a time.
And then,
although,
underneath.
Keep going.
Then he's asked about it. And because Greg makes a comment about, what if you have an erection? Because Greg's chin and face area is printed near the crotch of this jumper. And was like, and Ian's like, no, it works fine. And it's not like, that's not an issue. And then undoes his jacket to show that he's wearing a shirt with a bunch of little Greg faces printed on it. And then yoinks off his pants to reveal that he has Greg Davies print leggings on as well, which, Greg's only response is that it's a very thin material and that he can see Ian's junk. So classy.
Probably should have cut a hole where one of the mouths was.
It was not laid printed like that. They were on, it was a face on each leg. There was nothing near the crotch. I really thought he was then going to pull down the pants and reveal that he had Greg Davies print underwear. But he did not.
But no. You mentioned Guy Montgomery earlier. This is not that level of what Guy Montgomery did, because
I know what Guy Montgomery did. I said this was proto Guy Montgomery. This is.
Why do you have to know things we haven't seen yet?
Because shut the fuck up. I know everything.
Oh, really? What's my address?
Play the redacted sound effect, because I do know your address. Because I mailed you the... I mailed you... Play like a beep or something, because I know your address, because you told me what it was, so I could send you a Christmas card.
Oh, yeah, of course. What is it now?
Oh, God. I have to look through the fucking Instagram chat messages going.
Oh, he knows. We're not going to include it on the podcast for.
No, I'm not reasons. Going to dox Emerson, but I am going to go back and find it.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of doxing drama right now.
Over what?
Which we're not going to get into. Do you follow the YouTube scene in any sense?
There's a scene for it.
Whatever. These scores are: Ian gets 5 points, Paul gets 4, Sean 3, Lou 2, and Joe 1.
Yep.
My friend Joe, do you have any objections?
Let me think about it for a second. No.
All right, onwards we go. To the first VT task.
Yay, the VT task.
Yay. Divert the sand from bucket A into bucket B. You may not touch the sand. You may not move the buckets. This all sounds like a task we've heard before. You may not leave the room. Most sand diverted into bucket B wins. Your time stops when the sand stops. So what everyone does is they come into the room and Alex asks everyone to hold out, I think it's their right wrist, and their right wrist is attached to like a little trapdoor thing on the bottom of bucket A, which is hanging suspended from the ceiling just above everyone's heads. So they can't move their hand. Because, they can. They have to move their hand to open the trap door that releases the sand. But it's too far. Bucket B is too far away to just grab and bring underneath. And you can't do that anyway.
Now, this is so much crueler than I thought it was going to be. Because I thought when he tied the string to him that they were going to have, like, because the bucket's at an angle. I thought if they moved their arm, the bucket would fall over. So I like it was on a hinge or something. So I was like, "Oh, you're a bastard." But it's actually even worse because it's just a little piece of masking tape over the hole.
You might find this funny. While I was just explaining how the bucket was like suspended in the air and how they had their hands tucked in, I had my hand just held out in front of me to mime for no reason because there's no one else here. It's just me. Nope. And I. Not only did I just hold it out in front of me for about a minute, but it looks like I'm in a Nazi salute.
Yeah, that sounds about right. People will do that sometimes. Oh, what else was I thinking? Oh,
yeah.
I actually wanted to get your idea on this, which is they're in the lab.
I'm listening.
They're in the lab, right? So the lab
that's true.
The lab is plastic wrapped with like plastic film so that when they make a mess, it can just be carted away. I was really thinking when this was like, oh, I can't move bucket B to be under bucket A. But what if I just like either with my like cut out the plastic around it? Cause it's right. They can kind of reach the bucket with their foot. Like Alex, can you get me a knife? And then just like cut it out and drag the plastic over with the bucket on it. Cause then you're moving only the plastic.
Oh God, that sounds like
or just,
something I don't even want to.
Or just do the traditional thing of Alex, will you move this bucket for me?
I think
which there's no fun in doing that. He's stopped doing that, but also.
Yeah, cause I mean, like, as the more people watch Taskmaster, the more people get Taskmaster because we've got a contestant in Series 16, Sam Campbell, who's very obviously watched so much Taskmaster that he's sort of become an expert at it. Like he's got into Alex Horn's mind and he knows the sort of things he does. And I've never been so confident in someone's victory of the series as I am with him.
Yeah. That's very interesting.
We'll watch this age either really well or really badly.
Yeah, we will have to see how that progresses.
Although, the moment in it was, I won't spend too long talking about this, but the live task of the first episode of Series 16 is there's a seesaw and Alex has a bunch of objects. And you have to guess whether the object is heavier or lighter than the last object. And if you're correct, you keep going. If you're wrong, you're out, sort of thing. And Sam Campbell gets to the last two objects. And this is where his like knowledge of how Taskmaster works is on full display. Because he said, I think they're equal weight.
I saw that bit. Yes.
Alex Horn laughs. And Greg laughs. Greg encourages Sam to change to say that the teddy is heavier. Alex pulls the thing out, and it looks like the two things are actually equal weight. But then it turns out the leaf blower is heavier.
Well, no, what happened was that everybody jumped because the fucking thing didn't move, and it tilted then. Like, I maintain it was equal weight. Also, if we're talking about other Taskmaster tasks... A clip has been circulating on the internet now for a little bit of Taskmaster Portugal, their version of the Fell All the Ducks task.
Oh, you show me that. You show me that clip.
And it's hilarious because this poor guy, and this is the cast they have for that episode is fantastic because they are like throwing themselves on the floor in laughter. Is
also the chairs they have to sit on are really nice. They're like proper armchairs.
Yeah, but they have at the Taskmaster Portugal house a pool and they set dressed the pool with giant rubber duck floats that you can sit in. And so he walks up to the velvet rope facing the other direction and proceeds to never notice the four little ducks that he actually has to knock over. And so he spends like almost 20 minutes just hurling things at these enormous pool floats to knock them over. It's hilarious. And you can see him just get more and more deranged as he...
And when he notices the ones he actually has to knock down, it's like the saddest thing in the world.
It's hilarious. Just go and watch it. It's not subtitled. It is in Portuguese. You don't need to understand anything.
You don't need
anything.
Subtitles. I will admit, it took me a second to notice it, but when I did, I just froze.
I thought it was the funniest.
But anyway, should we talk
thing.
About this task?
Yes.
Should
we talk about this task? This comparatively much less funny task.
Yeah. It's a shame that we've been talking a lot about stuff that isn't this episode.
This task is...
No... One thing that should be noted is that Ian and Joe are the only ones wearing goggles. With Ian, I suppose it makes sense because he wears glasses, but Joe doesn't wear glasses.
No. Everyone, I think, was given goggles. They just didn't have them because Lou puts the goggles down. And, like, you can hear a gasp from the crowd because it's clear that she could have used those to move the
catch the sand. Oh, jeez. Oh, my God. This is like so many ways to play Taskmaster. God damn it. Anyway, we start out with Sean and Joe, the mother and son duo, I think they're called. Not together, of course, but that's what they're called when they do Teen Task. So Sean, I'm just going to read my notes verbatim because I can't remember it. Sean removed the string covering the hole in the bucket because of her height, causing her to panic and scoop the sand on the floor into the bucket with egg cups. She managed to divert 54% of the sand. I will say, though, having read that back, Sean panics a lot and then works it out and then still panics. That's like her task, her approach to every task. Joe Thomas is forever the control person. Initially tried to release the sand in a controlled manner to fill egg cups, but then completely removed the string blocking the hole and had to frantically pour egg cups full of sand. For some reason, wedged into a toilet roll.
Well, what he did with the toilet
roll... Did I write that? Or,
no, Taskmaster.info did. For what it's worth...
Sounds like something I'd write.
What he was doing was... I think his thought process was if he wedges it into the bottom of the toilet roll, then it'll fill up the entire cardboard tube... But it got stuck in the toilet roll. You see what I'm... You understand what I'm
yes,
saying?
Yes, I get. Okay. I do. I do. Joe manages to get slightly more sand than Sean, 56% of it. Ian did just like...
Ian Sterling, who has a law degree, is how he's introduced.
So what Ian does... is that he accidentally touches and moves the bucket and just decides to give up completely, leaves the room, he breaks all the rules and is disqualified from the task. And I think, I would have done the same.
Well,
the rules. There's no reason to keep going.
He read the rules and conflated moving the buckets and touching the sand. So he thought that by moving the bucket, he had already disqualified him. By touching the bucket, he had disqualified himself. So he moved the bucket, reread the rules, realized that he had fucked up only by moving the bucket, at which point he was like, fuck it. Because he knew he was fucked. I appreciate that for once in this show, someone breaks like a disqualification level rule and like immediately acknowledges it and like does not try and cheat or salvage it in some way.
Yeah, yeah. Looking at you, Paul Sinha.
When did Paul do that?
He took the milk bottle out of the room or something, or left the room and... Oh, he brought the milk bottle into the room that he shouldn't have brought it in.
In this task?
No, in an earlier episode.
Oh, God, I don't even remember that.
Do you remember the Orkney Islands thing?
Vaguely, yes.
That was that tar with the rice.
Oh, okay.
Then we've got Lou and Paul... both of whom decide to opt for the colander method. But Lou blocks the holes of hers so the sand doesn't fall out. And the difference is staggering.
Well,
Lou gets the most sand.
She only blocks the holes on the bottom. She doesn't do anything about the sides, but that's enough.
The difference it does is money because Lou gets the most sand and Paul gets the least amount of sand out of everyone who isn't disqualified.
But Paul did think to Paul's reasoning for that was by getting any sand in it, he is ahead of the idiot who got themselves disqualified, which Ian did. So
that's where Paul Sinha's smart. He's smart in predicting other people's actions, but he just can't really do his own actions right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the scores on the doors. Lou gets 5. Joe Thomas gets 4. Sean 3. Paul 2. And Ian gets a DQ.
There is an adapted version of this task, which is season 3, episode 3 of Stormmaster. And that's it.
Coming in season 9, the adapted task jingle. featuring Spelvin.
Hey. But then we have this. Okay, I'm going to start right now. This task is arguably one of my least favorite single tasks in all of Taskmaster. And it's not even because it's badly done. It actually, on the contrary, because this task is make the most realistic injury using food. You have 5 minutes to choose your ingredients, then 10 minutes to make your realistic injury. If two or more people use tomato ketchup, they are disqualified. Your time starts now. I'm gonna say this. This task specifically is really distressing on a visual level because everybody except Paul Sinha manages to make fairly realistic looking bloody injuries that I was not. It's like, like it makes you sort of go,
This is not your sort of thing, is it?
I don't normally. It's really weird, okay? I know it's fake, but it still is like just gore, that sort of thing. And I'm not on board for that.
If good fakeness can do that, I think that's a good sign. That's what it wants you to feel.
Yeah.
So that's a sign it was done well.
And then Paul Sinha, spoiler alert for like 20 seconds from now, Paul Sinha just stands there with a mouthful of fucking ketchup, which is revolting in a completely different way that I also don't wish to ponder, but yet I'm forced to. So
would you like to say what everyone did, Joe?
Yes, I would. So we started with Lou, who made
Cindy Lou Who.
Lou's whole thing is, again, how best to humiliate Alex. Well, actually, no, we should start by saying that Alex set up as the bit when he was introducing the task is he stood directly in front of the door and had everybody slam the door into his head as they came in, which made everybody except Sean feel really bad for him. It was either Sean or Lou who were like, I don't trust anything you say now, because she figured that it was a bit. And it was, because there were like fake blood droplets on the task. And it's like, you know, Alex is playing with fire because someday he might hurt himself and nobody will give a shit. But, so we start off with Lou.
Okay.
Lou sets this, all of these, none of these things are just like, here's this injury. It's all got like fucking set up to it. And so Lou is like,
yeah, there's like little stories around this stuff. This is like Channel 4 level Taskmaster shit.
Yeah, like, what if you have like no belt, loose pants, and a dog takes a bite out of your leg? And she just shows Alex, who is face down on the steps of the house with noodles and red sauce, and I think it's like and meat sauce on the back of his leg that looks like it's gotten a chunk taken out of it. This one's probably one of the less realistic looking ones.
I've always thought that the more gruesome injuries are the more realistic
and
likely to happen ones.
Yeah, that's
like, and like when you watch Squid Game, you're sort of like, to go back to Squid Game, season 2 is coming soon, and the reality show.
What could they possibly have a second season for? Didn't they?
Apparently,
we saw the Squid Game.
I mean, I thought that too. I thought that too. But
also,
apparently, something's happening.
Also, I really enjoy that they're making a reality show of Squid Game, notably a show about a reality show that murders its contestants. Like this is like prime people do not learn.
This is like, oh, you know, one of the greatest examples of irony of all time is like the Charlie Brown Christmas special that's like says that Christmas is too over commercialized, had to be like trimmed down so that they could put
commercials ads on it. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, no, this is like... Yeah, that's
sort of like that. I mean, no one dies in the reality show, of course.
No,
I mean,
but this is like...
No one intentionally dies.
This is like Mark Zuckerberg making the fucking metaverse modeled at least partially on Snow Crash, which is a book mostly about do not create immersive VR universes, immersive technological universes made by corporations. And it's like, come on, guys. Come on. Do we not learn anything? But anyways, where were we? We did Lou. Next, we're doing
Joe.
What? Yes, it was Joe. And
Joe's made a sort of PSA kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Top tier cinematography from Joe. From Joe on this one, absolutely great. A dramatic video warning people about getting stabbed in the eye with birthday cakes. Again, completely distressing imagery of his eye having several birthday candles sticking out of it and chunks of cake. The injury was almost entirely made of cake. And it's like, it's one of these things where it's like, wow, that's not nice to look at. And so,
but that's the whole point.
I know. Yeah. It's just that it's like I need to say this. This task is very well done. I hate it, but it's very well done.
It's like Thanks, I Hate It,
yes,
for Joe.
Yes, Thanks, I Hate It is this task. Except for Paul Sinha. Paul's up next. Paul,
we've gone on so many. We've not gone on tangents for a while.
No, we haven't. But Paul.
But anyway, yeah, talk about Paul.
Paul is the only one who, Paul read the task and was like, nobody else is going to do ketchup because it says ketchup on here. If two people use ketchup, they're both disqualified. Which actually nobody else did ketchup because they all had much higher standards. But
it was one step away from not mattering.
Yeah, but Paul decided that he was going to use ketchup. So, which again, I'd like to point out that Paul Sinha is a doctor of medicine. And so Paul Sinha does a crossword, he's doing a crossword for like, and the answer I think is like blood orange, which is a type of citrus fruit. It's like a variety. And he coughs up a mouthful of ketchup, which is, I can't imagine having that much ketchup in my mouth. Like, I can't even imagine how he has to ingest that much ketchup. And then he like spits it out over the table and like, you know, presumably it's internal injuries or something. And then they pan over the crossword puzzle, which just says blood on it, framed by the ketchup blood. And you can tell it's ketchup immediately because ketchup is very viscous and thick compared to actual blood. And so it was disgusting, but not because it was an injury, but because you have to imagine having that much ketchup in your mouth. And so not,
I think I'd be sick.
Oh no.
And not in the same way.
I thought about it and I was like, oh God, like it might actually make you ill. And then, finally that next we have Sean, who made Alex look like he had an open chest wound after being stabbed by a pen, which, and then also
ludicrous.
What?
Oh, I was just saying, it was just like, it's just such a ludicrous thing. Oh,
it is very ludicrous. There's also one of the ducks is there. One of the fake ducks they have is there. And she comes with this whole storyline for it. She giggles as she walks away from this, really liking it. I didn't pay attention to.
Oh, you didn't mention Ian.
Well, Ian's next, isn't he? Ian was last, wasn't he?
I thought he was second to last.
Oh, I have it written down wrong. I'm sorry. I wrote him in the
wrong
order.
Anyway, keep talking.
Sean was, I did not pay attention to what the list of food was, but it does occur to me that Sean used a full English breakfast to portray Alex's wound, which I thought was very interesting. And then Ian, who is not final, he is second to final. Again, very gruesome looking. He got a ham bone sticking out of his, like, or like some kind of like T-bone, ribeye, like a turkey leg, something that's a bone.
Yeah, a big bone as well.
Stuck like it out of a
hole. It's big enough to look like a human
yeah,
bone.
Yeah, stuck it out of the hole of, cut a hole in a pair of jeans, stuck it out, and made it look like his leg has come off or has like a gaping compound fracture. Oosh. And then the whole, and then Alex is standing there holding a tin of baked beans with the lot, with the terrible internal logic of Alex has just sawed off Ian's leg with a tin of baked beans, which is if we were judging them on story, I'd say these all sucked, but these are actually all really good except for Paul. So
yeah, Greg agrees with you.
Yeah, I would probably, so Greg gives Sean 5, Ian, Joe, and Lou
get 4,
and then Paul gets 1. I would probably give I would not give Sean 5 points. I think if we're doing just a single one for 5, I would give it to Joe Thomas. Otherwise, I would probably just give everybody either 4 points or 5 points, except for Paul, who gets 1. So that's the all scores, right. And Taskmaster Joe with no jingle because I didn't let Emerson do that. And then
what is us with us not giving time for the jingles?
Because you can play it right now.
It's the Taskmaster, and his name is Joe, and he's gonna tell us what we should know. It's
boy, isn't that fun when I have when he has control over the edits. And then there is also an adapted task of this, again in Stormmaster, Season 6, Episode 6, which is very interesting considering the bucket task was Season 3, Episode 3. Very interesting. You could do whole bullshit numerology on this. And then all right. Onwards.
VT Task 3.
Yes, to you.
Have a long distance game of catch with this beach ball. The beach ball looks like a watermelon, by the way.
Yes.
One team member must be filmed in one location throwing the ball out of shot. Another team member must be filmed in a different location catching the ball correctly and throwing it out of shot. Another team member must be filmed in another location catching the ball correctly and throwing it out of shot, and so on. Greatest distance apparently covered by the beach ball wins. You have 2 months. Your time starts now. So yeah, we've got the team of 3, Ian, Lou, and Paul, and the team of 2, Joe and Sean,
and special mystery guest.
Oh yeah, one of the greatest previous contestant cameos in the history of Taskmaster. Certainly one of my personal favorites, and I completely forgot about it because it's season 8. What the hell is there to remember? So Ian, Lou, and Paul are shown first. I've written down their exact route, which is strange because there's a lot of overlapping locations, but you'll see what I mean. So the route goes Chiswick to London to Brighton to New York City to Liverpool to Soho to Edinburgh to Southend to Rutland back to New York City.
I like that Chiswick is its own independent place, even though it's still in London.
And London and Soho.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what I was going to say. So they get, they manage to cover a distance of 10,557 miles. But Paul manages to do 1,142 miles just on his own. And he was able to receive a bonus point from this.
Yeah, he they actually showed a complete cut of just Paul going places.
And it was quite long as well. Mm-hmm. And Paul got this 1 point because it was more than double what Joe and Sean accomplished.
It's almost so they pretended more than to be treble. Not quite.
Yeah, but not quite. So Joe and Sean pretend to be in various locations.
Yeah, they say they're in places like Malaysia and
I didn't
Tokyo.
Write down the route because I didn't know I just didn't know for sure at that point. But we have a previous contestant cameo in the form of the father, the son, the very angry man, Ramesh Ranganathan. Although he's not very angry here. He's got like some sort of robe on.
And I thought it was a coat.
He's not wearing his glasses. Well, it looked like some sort of religious robe or something. But so they're in like, when they like rock up in places like New Zealand, or I say rock up in an air quotation marks, when they're in New Zealand and Malaysia in air quotation marks, Ramesh is there with Sean saying, wow, you caught the ball here in New Zealand. Well, you caught the ball here in Malaysia, and they're laughing. I think it's when they're in quote unquote Malaysia,
yeah,
or wherever it was, that they throw the ball out of shot, it hits something, and they both
the camera shakes
laughing.
The camera shakes, yeah, because the whole thing is it's clearly like Sean ran into Ramesh at some sort of event where they were both attending, and so she told him about this, and they just stood in a room and filmed for like 10 minutes, and this is, you know, they think they can slide this by although then again, Joe Thomas also pulled this bullshit because he's like in Tokyo and he's in front of a cherry blossom tree, and in Rome and he's in front of like a stone wall. Like it's like he's claiming these things and he is not.
Like he's in space and it's just like him standing in front of a space painting, and then the ball flies out of shot and you can clearly see it's fake.
Yeah.
They only actually covered 466 miles. So the team of two get 2 points. The team of three get 3 points, but Paul gets one extra point because he covered the most individual distance.
Yeah. So,
and then we go to task four.
And we are,
unless there's an adapted task.
Nope. We are herding ping pong balls into a pen. We are back at the railway center, which is now featured in three separate tasks. This is after the hide from Alex and figure out what Alex is wearing tasks. This time they are on one of the interior platforms of the museum section, where they are
at the Buckingham Railway Center.
Where there are two little pens set by pens, I mean like with a fence and everything, set up about 32 yards from each other. So about 90-ish.
Well, they said 36 meters.
36 meters, I'm sorry. Which is about 100-something feet. And so the task is as follows. Herd the most ping pong balls into the ping pong pen. You may only touch the ping pong balls with the basketball, the string, or one little finger. You may not move the ping pong pens. You have 10 minutes. Your time starts now. To clarify, the ping pong pen that the ping pong balls, there's 100 ping pong balls. The pen they are in has three sides, with one side facing down the platform towards the other one,
yep,
which has four sides. Then we have the basketball is sitting on top of three balls of string, and the ping pong balls are just loose on the ground. There's also a ball that has heard me and have your total written on it, which is not revealed until the end. But
yeah,
we start.
Only two contestants get that, I think.
Who are they?
Wait and find out. Ooh.
It's the two that actually try really hard, because we start with Joe and Lou. And Joe and Lou both attempt to herd the balls individually by balancing them on the string. Because the balls of string are like wound around a central thing, and so there's a hole in the middle, like a toilet paper roll. So they're trying to put the ping pong balls on that, but it's a long distance away to the other pen. So
this is an obscenely long distance.
So they basically cannot do this and get everything in without like hustling a lot. And even then they wouldn't have time. So they both do what I actually thought of the instant I saw this, which is cut the basketball open and use it as a makeshift carrying bag. So Joe got, then it inexplicably, they both got 51 balls, which I thought was shocking that they both had the same number. Then we have, was it Ian or Paul next? My notes do not
specify. I think it's both of them or something.
Yes.
Oh, no, maybe it was just Ian by himself. No,
Ian by himself and Paul and Sean. I took very bad notes on this. I'm sorry. Ian did actually hustle. He got the ping pong and just ran them back and forth with the balls of string holding them up. He got 27 balls back and forth this way, which is very impressive. A lot of stamina, good hustle. And then we got Paul and Sean. So Sean Gibson just did the balls of string method and got 8 balls. And then Paul Sinha used the basketball, fully inflated, to hurt a single ping pong ball down the entire length of the platform to the other pen, and that was it. But, of course, it looks like we're going to have a tie for first with Joe and Lou. Tragedy strikes because both of them hurted the special ball. So they are both reduced to 25 and a half balls, meaning that Ian Sterling's 27 balls takes the lead and takes the win. There is an adapted version of this.
Ian Sterling.
There is an adapted version of this task. Two of them, in fact. Basti Test Season 4, Episode 10 makes them do it.
Fucking Basti Test.
It makes them do it across a humped pedestrian bridge with no special balls. And also they have a leaf blower available, which is very interesting. And then Stormester's 2021 Christmas special have to be moved across an ice rink. Two special balls are present, a green one, which if relocated doubles the number of balls moved, and a black one, which if relocated disqualifies the contestant. Which is evil.
Yes, that is horrific.
It does not say in the task brief that if you move that, that's what happens. Evil fucks. And then we're on to the live task, which is, again, oh, fuck. It's just people agonizing over a visual task. Good for you, Emerson. You get to do it.
All right, let's see what we have. These live tasks are the bane of my existence. Recreate the scene in the box. You will parade past it once and must be touching the person in front of you throughout the parade. Most accurate scene recreation wins. You have 20 seconds after the parade. So basically, they get into a conga line. 200
seconds but after the parade.
200 seconds. So basically, they get into a conga line if you hate... But it's the sort of conga line you get into if you hate conga lines. So like... They're not holding on to each other. They're not dancing. They're just all of one hand on each other's shoulders at the farthest possible. You can't see me, but I've got my right hand stuck out in front of me, 1940s Germany style again. But they're doing that. They walk around. Alex is walking around really fast, and some of the contestants with shorter legs struggle to keep up.
This is a very heightist podcast. Not podcast, TV show.
I'm sorry, what?
This is a very heightist TV show.
I was wondering what the fuck.
I was going to say, what the fuck
are you on about? Because you and I are, are basically within 1 inch of height.
Then
of each
again,
other.
I'd be very. Oh, then we definitely are heightist because we don't hire short people. Short people are being under 6 foot.
We don't hire them.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but I'm tish.
Probably should have just said nothing and told me to insert crickets chirping or something.
Nope.
I'm glad you liked it. So yeah, they all wander around once. They move by really quickly, almost too quickly. And I'm just gonna talk through what everyone wrote in order. We might even get a Taskmaster Joe out of this if Joe likes what they've written.
I did not give two shits.
Is it with these episodes having either no or very little jingles? Because I feel like the jingles are a part of the podcast.
It is a part of the pod. I mean, we can look at one, but they all sucked. They all sucked, these drawings.
Do you remember in the early days of this podcast when we actually did one of the tasks ourselves to an extent?
No, but I believe you.
Remember in the final episode of the first season, we did the
food test. Yes. Well, that's different because at that point there were like most of these are ones that you cannot really easily. Sorry, almost sneezed there. It's not ones you can very easily armchair quarterback like that. Like, I can't come up with how I would solve some insane logic puzzle made by a man with a humiliation fetish. So it's not like I can do. It's not like I can do that. Like, I have to be.
What the fuck?
So. What? Oh, good. Emerson's just died.
Oh, no, I'm still here.
I heard what the fuck and then nothing.
Oh, no, I was just like, I forgot why I said that. I said it like 2 seconds ago and I just completely. Ian basically made some paper balls on a stick. Joe drew the Snoop pockets and wrapped the balloon pump in paper, which I thought was pretty good, whilst making the snooker balls out of balloons. Lou drew a baguette and a traffic light. Oh, yeah, there was a baguette on the thing. Basically, it was like a.
It was a pool scene. It was a pool table with balls and the triangle and a baguette in lieu of pool cubes.
That is right.
So what did everyone draw?
So we've got. So yeah, I've said Ian and Joe. Lou drew the baguette and she got a traffic light on one piece of paper for some reason and struck two balloons on another piece of paper. This is me reading it verbatim because I just have nothing to say. Paul made a paper boat and some balls out of balloons and paper. Sean made a triangle out of a balloon and drew a snooker table on a piece of paper, not realizing the green base already represented the snooker table. Sean Gibson being Sean Gibson. So we got three people on 2 points, Lou, Paul and Sean. Then we jump up to 4 points for Ian, and Joe Thomas gets the 5 points. But it's not enough to overthrow Ian Sterling, who wins the episode with 21 points! That was me. That was my last-ditch attempt at something mildly enthusiastic.
Wins the episode.
Yes, he does. And with that, we are at the halfway points of Season 8. Honestly, these 10-episode series feel... They're already really long. But in the Channel 4 era, in the Dave era, sorry, they feel especially long.
Yeah, it's the real issue is just that the tasks get a lot more ephemeral, almost. I want to say like Alex is having to not only just outdo himself, but also like it's really difficult because. Because previous contestants have sort of informed him that you can't do X, you can't do Y, because otherwise you'll like if you don't say you can't move the bucket.
It becomes boring. It becomes boring to watch.
He litigates out his own the loopholes because otherwise people will abuse the loopholes in a boring fashion. Like they essentially need to hire like a team of lawyers. To write things so that the only way you can do this is obscure. The only way you can win these is through obscure loopholes.
I mean, that'd be an interesting way of formulating the tasks for series to come. I mean, I think series 17 has wrapped up production. Obviously, we know nothing about it yet.
They're filming Champion of Champions 3.
Oh yeah!
Somebody took a spy shot of the Taskmaster house. Oh, speaking of
the Taskmaster shots, house has gone through so much changes lately.
Yeah, speaking of spy shot, what was I about to say? Oh, what back in? Yeah, that's what it was. I forgot to mention that during the fucking injuries task. I think they filmed Sean's. Task with a drone, which I thought was a very interesting choice because it just zooms down in on Alex's chest wound and then just sort of like hovers there. It was a very interesting shot taking technology, but nothing else worth mentioning.
Okay, good. That's up for the episode. We are halfway through series 8, and honestly, I feel like this series is taking forever.
It is taking forever. But that's
I want to cover Taskmaster New Zealand because I think it will breathe some new life into us.
But also, we haven't gotten that far yet, so we just have to die first. So I will.
I mean, who knows what happens after Series 9? We might end the podcast.
We could be killed.
Yeah, I mean, we can't do this shit forever.
We could explode. We could die. I'm going to hit stop before Emerson announces the podcast ending without telling me.
We are in a simulation.
Computer, end recording.
Bye.